the world wallows in the blood of victory and liberation some 70 years ago, when we were all saved from evil in the most awful battle in human history, the Good War, they call it, we are still at a loss, largely, to what actually happened and why it happened. We've done enough research to realize that there are some fantastical stories, myth-making, that has been built up, constructed, lies upon lies that are so monumental that it seems preposterous even to challenge them. But it is what it is, and we want to know what actually happened. And doing so, we have to challenge what we've been taught and told. And since we live in a time of utter propaganda, social engineering, and information management, I think it is wise to look to the words of the people themselves that lived at the time and hear what they have to say, since you basically these days get the same broken record, contrived and controlled view from basically every single news network, radio channel, TV station, and documentary production house. We are not interested in propagating those same lies that they've been running on repeat for 40 to 50 years at least. No, we're interested in what actually happened. So we'll not join in the choir of propaganda as the West and East are now on the same page, basically competing with each other in their own little information war in order to gain credit for being the side of the bun in the German hamburger that dominated and defeated evil the time when Satan came to Earth and when the world was saved. So instead of joining in on that fest, we'll be talking about the other side of the story, the one not only less heard, but the actively suppressed side of the story that you are never allowed to hear about, and share with you parts of the experience from the German people themselves, from the German perspective, and look at the carnage that was visited upon them. You know that you'll never get the tidbits of information that contradicts the official stories, those things pointing to the inconsistencies that tell you that there is a different story here, one that actually gives reason to what has been presented as just utter madness. It doesn't make sense if we look at it from that point of view. We are going to talk about the film Hellstorm. I urge you to look at the film before you listen to this program. I think you'll get more out of it that way as well. HellstormDocumentary.com is the website. Go there. You can watch the film for free. It's available on YouTube. Just search for Hellstorm. When you've watched the film, come back here and we will sit down and have a conversation with the author and the filmmaker to discuss not only the film, but some of the other issues that are pressing for both Tom Goodridge and Kyle Hunt. This is an extended segment, so 2 hours is coming up. It's great to have you both here with us today. I want to thank you for taking the time. Let's welcome you first, Mr. Goodridge. Thank you for joining us once again. It's great to have you back.
Well, Henrik, it's my pleasure, I assure you, and thanks for having me back.
You bet, thank you. And Mr. Hunt as well, welcome. It's always good to have you with us. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Henrik.
Well, here we are, guys, 1 week now after May Day when Hellstorm was released, the latest film that you guys have released. We are recording this just 1 day now before the 70th anniversary of so-called VE Day, Victory in Europe Day, on May 8th. And this is when Germany, of course, signed unconditional surrender, and it was officially announced that World War II, at least in Europe, had ended. And I think this time begs for some reflection on our part so that we can understand how many of our fellow men, women, and children were slaughtered in this war. Our great-grandparents, our grandparents, our parents for some, I guess even friends too for some that are old enough. And unfortunately, many Europeans today don't have a clue how many of their own countrymen died. I think it also merits some revisiting on our part so that we can try to understand what actually happened and why it happened. And why it happened in the way it did. So this film, Hellstorm, is heartbreaking. It's soul-crushing to anyone who feels for the victims of war, and it shows a side of history that has been covered up, I'd say, for the last 70 years. And the film is based, of course, on the book with the same titled, authored by Tom Goodridge. But tell us first, Kyle, why did you want to make this film?
Well, I had interviewed Tom, and I had read his book, and this material is obviously very, very powerful. It's very disturbing. And I realized that as disturbing as it was reading through Hellstorm, it would be even more heartbreaking to watch it all unfold. And I felt like it would make it more accessible to the public who might not be interested in reading through all of the gruesome details, but could sit down for an hour, 2 hours, and experience it, you know, through the words of the survivors as read aloud by voice actors, and to watch the films and listen to a narrator tell the tale. And I said to Tom, this really needs to be made into a documentary. And although some other people had talked about this with him before, no one had really stepped up and done it yet. So I said, you know, I've got some experience with video. Let's see if I can get this done. We started raising some funds for it, and I found all of this footage that I didn't even know was available. We trimmed down the script to a 90-minute length eventually, and most of it is taken right from the book. And we were able to put together something here with all sorts of different talent contributing to the film, and that is really something special, I think, and really brings Tom's book to life for a wide audience.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so many things in the film, of course. Was there any things that you had to remove that there just wasn't time for, of more material that was available, more footage and stuff? Because as we kind of briefly talked about before the show here, there might be so much material film-wise available out there, but obviously you did a good job at finding things to go along with the narration. I thought that would have been really difficult at first, but I was surprised to see how much was actually available.
It was pretty difficult to find all of these different clips that are used. I had to go out and search through the translations of what I was looking for in different languages, so to come up with a phrase in English and then look for it in German, you know, such as rape survivors of World War II, and go through large documentaries where I couldn't understand much of the text at all, and find some stock footage, find some different testimony and things like that, and just search through hours and hours and hours and hours of material to put together this 90 minutes. And of course, not everything is available. I was surprised at how much actually was. There are certain scenes in the film where people will really see the carnage up close. For example, in Nemersdorf, when Soviet soldiers first punched through into the boundaries of Germany and just basically massacred and raped an entire town. Now, the Germans were able to reconquer the area and were able to film all of this devastation. And it's not very high-quality film, but it exists. We don't have much of that film because, unfortunately, the Germans kept getting pushed back, and they weren't able to always reconquer and to show the world what was going on in these places. So oftentimes it's just eyewitness testimony, so we have to use some dramatizations and movie clips in certain areas. But even so, I trimmed down the film a great deal. There's so much more that could be discussed, but it's very hard for the average viewer to get through even 20 minutes of this. So I tried to keep it as concise as possible.
Yeah, no, it's very well made. Now, let's just talk a little bit, for those who are not familiar with the material, about the, I guess, what lays the foundation for the film. Because just as a book, Tom, you focus in on 1944 to 47, not showing anything basically that goes on as much beforehand. But it's, the important thing is what happens to a country like this, to people like this, who are pushed back in the way they were and everything that happened. Just tell us, why did you want to focus in on that period, Tom?
Well, it didn't come overnight. I'd actually thought quite a bit about this. And when I originally went to work on the research of the book, then I realized, hey, I'm onto something enormous here, because I was rather naive about the war, like most people are, I'm sure. But it did eventually start taking shape, and I realized that this is going to be the darkest and best-kept secret in world history, what I reveal here in this book. And for the first time ever, as far as I know, this was the first book dedicated solely to what it looked like from the loser's perspective. We've gotten a victor's narrative for the last 70 years, let's face it. And so this was going to be what it looked like to the defeated German nation. And, you know, there's been a mountain of hate and lies and propaganda heaped upon Germany for the last 70 years. And I thought then, and I think now, that it's very important to learn what happened to the German people in the hope that this never happens again, quite honestly. This isn't a rehash just for some sort of a gratuitous bloodlust on my part.
Right.
But we needed to know what happened to these people in our name. For the first time ever, it wasn't what the Germans did to the world. It was what the world did to the Germans. And this book, and now, thank goodness, this film, are dedicated to that premise that this will never happen again. Not in our names, not in our time. And therefore, Kyle's job with the film, I don't know how to say this, except that it's what every author would dream about. Here is a movie based upon the book that is accurate, that is point by point following what the book said. It's not off on some tangent. It doesn't go down a rabbit hole. It doesn't go out on a squirrel's limb. This is something that treats this book the way it was intended to be, truthfully, honestly, and I must say with an extreme amount of horror, sadness, pathos, and hopefully resolve that this never happens again. And so, you know, I can't say enough about the film. I can say this, the obvious, that very few people, Henrik, anymore read, unfortunately. People don't seem to have the time for it. However, everybody can watch and everybody can listen. That's where a film like this comes in handy. Now, the people who do read, fortunately, these are our leaders. This is our leader quality of people who can actually sit down on an important subject and read a book dedicated to it. Whereas the film, as I see it, Kyle, you can interrupt me on this if you want. I see it as basically something geared toward the large numbers of people. Let's call them the mass. I hate that term because it sounds Marxist. But it's geared toward the people who don't have time to read or can't read or won't read, whatever it may be. But they can damn sure watch and listen and learn. Is that a fair do you think that's fair, Kyle, for me to
– Yeah, it's geared towards everybody. Even the people who are very well researched in this area are watching the film and saying either I didn't know that or I did know most of that, and yet I really, really appreciate this film. So it's not just for the novice but also for the expert as well. And anybody out there that – likes the film needs to go and buy the book because there is so much that is left out. The book is just full of material, and I couldn't cover nearly, you know, a quarter of it in 90 minutes. Not at all. So it really is a different experience reading through all of the different witness testimony and getting a broader perspective of what was going on as the war came to a close and what happened afterwards. So the book is really, really monumental, and it really provides much more context and many more incidents for the reader than the
film. And Henrik, what Kyle also did with his film was what I did with the book. He makes it a very personal approach. He takes a very personal approach and makes it a full contact a piece of art, wherein that the people are doing the talking themselves. And it's just as is the book. I don't think you can deliver a message any more appropriately than in the words of the people themselves. What it was like to undergo a terror bombing in the late stages of the war, an attempt to destroy every man, woman, and child in every German city. He does it. He does it with special effects and with photos, imagery. And I did it with imagination alone. And I've got to say this while I've got the thought on my brain right now. Kyle had the really hard job. I did the research for the book, and I had to do the interviews with the people themselves who went through this nightmare that we call the Good War. I had to rewrite it and rewrite it over and over, as one does with a book. You have to make several passes. Whereas Kyle, he has to look at this film every day. He has to see new film, new horrific stuff, horrible stuff. And to me, that's, I could never do that. My imagination is vivid enough, lurid enough, but to actually see the images of people dying, being killed, being beaten up, being tortured, being bombed, slaughtered, the bodies burning, that is something. You know, Kyle, there's some places in the film, too, that I've never looked at. When I know what's coming, I turn away. Yeah. And I'm not the only one. I've had other people tell me that already in the last few days. I simply cannot look at it.
Kyle, tell us a little bit more about that, and because obviously you're familiar with the material, you're aware of it, you know it, you've gone through it, but is there any point as you're watching all this when it kind of, because it tends to happen to me too, when you go through the material and you work so intimately with some of the stuff that you're like, it hits you really what happened, and you get a realization from a completely different angle that almost surprises you on an emotional level. Did that happen to you at some stage?
Yes, definitely. I became pretty desensitized quickly. As one of the quotations in the film says, one acted like a zombie. This is a person who had experienced the horrors of Dresden. Eventually, you get used to seeing all of the dead bodies, all of the victims. But it was really overwhelming emotionally for me at points when I would see the beauty of the German people. The children, the women, the happy men. This is oftentimes when it would hit me really, really hard, the loss that everyone experienced during this so-called good war. And especially when it's put to music, like I do at the very end of the film. And I'd like to encourage people to make it all the way to the end, all the way to the very end of the film. I know it's hard, but it's worth it. I think you're doing yourself and the victims of this terrible crime a disservice by not going through the entire film. And I hope you shed a few tears. I think it's very important that people do let their emotions take them so that they can actually feel what was happening to these poor people during this time.
Yeah. Well, we have been isolated from this, obviously, from this part of the documentation of what happened. It's largely unknown to most people, I'd say. It's due to the fact that it has been, covered up. The question is, 70 years, though, is that enough time? I mean, there's an endless amount of, anger and other kinds of emotions, sadness, guilt, and all kinds of things you can imagine. People have been traumatized, even, people have been told what they... what they think happened or what happened have been traumatized by it as well. But is the world ready to hear the other side, to hear the truth about what actually happened to Germany? Kyle, what do you think?
I think the world's ready, but the governments of this world aren't ready. The different special interest groups that run things in our various countries, they're not ready for this truth. That's why it's outlawed in many countries. Some people have suggested that I actually make formal requests of the German government to review this film to see whether or not it is going to be banned in Germany. And if anybody would like to help me with that, if they know German and know who to contact, please do get in touch. That would be a very interesting thing to do. But it just goes to show how game-changing this truth is that you're not even allowed to question the victor's version of World War II. Legally.
Yeah.
You'll get thrown in prison.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom, regarding that question there?
Yeah, well, back to your question, is the world ready for it? I agree with Kyle. It is. But as he mentions, the special interests are not. Of course, that's their money engine. That's the thing that keeps them going. I'm talking about the Jewish power grid in the world right now. They will fight tooth and nail to keep the truth out of the general public. I've got to say this, though. Lots of luck with that one. We've got so many people, so many dedicated people right now You know, the truth, it's like a narcotic. Once you have a little bit, it's like a really good cocaine, I suppose. Once you have a little bit, hey, a little bit more perhaps, and then finally you can't live without it. And that's what's so frightening, I'm sure, to the power brokers of the world, is that once the truth gets out of that bottle, the genie out of the bottle, it's probably never going to go back in it. I've got to tell you right now, the genie's out of the bottle. It's just a matter of time right now. Right now, I think we're in a rush. We're in a rush to save the world. And that sounds awfully noble and dramatic. But as you guys both know, we all have our ears to the ground. We know what's going on in this world right now. We could be in a very terrible situation within a week or a day even. And so we need to work night and day, I think, as we're all doing, as a fact, as I know we're all doing, to hold back the dawn, so to speak, to try to let the world know what happened 70 years ago. Yeah, it sounds like a long time ago to most people who are 20 and 30 listening to this program, but we're still living that war, and that's the reason it is so important to learn what happened in that war, to learn what was not said about that war, to learn about the lies and the propaganda, or we're going to repeat that. In fact, a lot of folks think we are repeating it right now in the Middle East, and I can't argue with that. The things that we're doing right now, the things that are being hushed up. There I go again. I'm not sure I'm on a rabbit trail, but I've got to believe, gentlemen, that we're living a new dawn right now, and that I feel sorry for those people who refuse to come over to our side, who are listening to us right now, tens of thousands of people that listen to Henrik. And yet, I mean, they're listening to us for a reason. They're cheerleading in their hearts, I'm sure. They want us all to succeed. But they won't come out and help us. They will listen to us, and they will cheerlead. Let me digress just a bit. I got a very interesting email today from a very good friend, one of us. A friend of his had just written him a few days ago, 11 years younger than him, and he has cancer. And he thought the cancer was gone. Well, guess what? The cancer is back in a rage right now. He's got a week to live. And the guy said to my friend, he said, I'm too young to die. And he's right. He's a young man, relatively speaking. How many folks out there right now are going to get that same message from the doctor? I only have a week to live. I have a month to live. You know, in one form or another, we're all facing that, whether it's cancer, whether it's a stroke, whether it's just death by old age. We're all facing that. Of the tens of thousands of people out there listening to this right now, how many are doing a damn thing right now? How many are actively involved in this revolution that we're in right now? I think everyone listening should get involved. There are ways of getting involved without risking life, limb, jobs, family. There are many things you can do. You can donate to Henrik. I'm sure Henrik would love to have donations. You can donate to Kyle. Donate to people who are actually fighting your fight. If you cannot come out, do something positive. Don't end up like that friend of my friend, getting a diagnosis from the doctor, he's got 1 week to live, and asking yourself, what have I done with my life? Have I done a damn thing with my life other than eat, sleep, beget, and go to, and then die? And if the answer is no, then you need to be doing something right now. You need to get on board, because we're going to win this. I'm going to tell you that right now. We're going to win. It's just a matter of time. The more help we get, the quicker we're going to win this thing. So let me encourage you, and I'm sorry this sounds like an advertisement for Henrik and Kyle, but it is. We need your help. Join up. Subscribe to Henrik. Subscribe to Kyle. Buy his documentary, and then do more things. Eventually come over to our side and help us, and I guarantee you, with your support, with the tens of thousands listening right now, we're going to sweep the enemy from the field. We're going to win in no time flat. There, I'm through with my little – I'm sorry, but
Oh, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. Do you want to interject, Kyle, there?
Just quickly to follow up on that, as an incentive for people to get on board, well, this documentary shows what happens if we lose again, if we allow – the communist hordes to overrun our lands completely. We've already got a little bit of a taste of that, a little bit of this hellstorm unleashed upon us. Look what's going on in all European lands, in America, in Australia, and everywhere where white people were or are a majority. We're being flooded by invaders. They're being incited against us through communist propaganda, oftentimes officially openly communist groups. They are raping our women. They are torturing our children, our elderly. It's all very well documented, but you're not going to see it on the mainstream news, of course. They're actually burning people alive. This is a big thing amongst blacks in America, burning white people alive. It's happened a number of times, especially recently. We're getting a little bit of this hellstorm, and we need to stand up right now and put a stop to it.
Well, I think that kind of speaks to a little bit to why the topics are always pertinent in this kind of capacity, because these forces overall, if we take a bigger view on the situation here, it seems like they come and go in cycles, and it's part of something which is, I guess, larger to a certain extent. It's just not something that played out in Germany at the mid 40s. It's something that has come and gone many times before, it seems like, and it seems that the participation of people in one side or another is what kind of drives these conflicts together. I don't know. It's more of a philosophical view on something here, I guess. But it's, I don't know. I can't help to think that it's somehow a larger drama that is at play here. What do you think, Tom?
Well, what both of you people say is almost breathtaking to me. I agree. If you look at what's going on right now, if you know what Kyle knows, yeah, you could say that it's a continuum. It's a continuum from World War II. But I agree. It would appear as if we're in the early stages of our own personal hellstorm here. I think probably the impetus for this has been the internet, that suddenly we're organizing, and suddenly we're developing our own media, and suddenly we're developing our own film production techniques. Everything's starting to come together, including the numbers. By the thousands, people are recognizing that we're in, that there are options in this world now, and you better pick the right one. Thank goodness most are picking us. That's pretty scary stuff, because if you know what I know, and if you know what Kyle knows, unless we get a grip, we're in for some truly, truly terrible times ahead. And it's not getting any better in this country, the United States, that is, or in Europe. Yes, we are. We're being flooded. Our backs are being pushed to the wall. And why they are deliberately doing this without any compunction whatsoever, all I can figure is that they believe that they're so almighty and all-powerful that there will never be any blowback, any pushback from the whites in the European country, Canada, United States, Australia, New Zealand. And, you know, I don't believe it, but they might be right. They might be actually right. We might have been so dumbed down, so traumatized by the modern world that we will never push back. Now, I don't believe that. I believe this. Our instincts are going to kick in any day now. I'm talking about the majority of folks. But I don't know. That's another great reason to see this movie, to see what you might be looking at your future, folks.
Right, right.
In the near future.
I just want to quickly add here that it's not necessarily that the whites won't push back. It's just that the Jewish controllers who basically opened up the floodgates of immigration think that they can misdirect our anger through various groups which are Zionist-controlled, Jewish-controlled, and these people, these white patriotic people, are misled into really only seeing the symptom and not the disease.
Right, yeah, I know what you're talking about, Kyle, and I don't mean to sidetrack the conversation. This is something I do want to return to later. However, I think we might have some people that tune in because they don't understand the view that you guys want to present, or maybe even why. And let's just spend a moment and speak to that for a little bit, because they might have seen the film, they might be searching for your names and listening for interviews or whatever, and they want to try to understand, you know, wait a minute, what the hell, what's going on here? You know, everyone might not be on the same page here. Why is this side of the story so suppressed? We can begin there, maybe. Why is it so dangerous, do you guys think, for this to come out? And if it did come out, how would it change things? Are we in that situation where a lot of other things that have happened consequently is kind of hinged on the Second World War? Kyle, your take on that?
Well, let's just think about the monetary aspect of this and how much money Israel has gotten because of the victor's version of World War II. If the truth came to light, would they have to repay all of that money? Would they have to compensate the German victims and their families? And what about all of those 93-year-old men who have been imprisoned, or however old they are? They're going after these German criminals up until their 90s. It's absolutely sickening to see these people facing trial still for these alleged crimes they committed, when the Soviet terrorists never really had to account for their crimes, did they? They don't get any movies made about what they did. No, it's pretty much still that we have Uncle Joe that can't be criticized. You know, yeah. Winston Churchill and Franklin Delano Roosevelt are completely beyond reproach now. They are basically demigods in the mainstream political discussion, whether you're talking about things from the left or the right. So this really changes things around, and it basically takes away the bottom cards of this whole house of cards, and everything tumbles down from there, because the last 70 years have pretty much been built on this this lie as to what really took place in World War II, what led up to it, and what happened afterward. And I think that it's really important for them to keep their narrative of history going, and they feel very threatened by a film like this, which tries to encompass all of the suffering of the German people. There are plenty of films out there that deal with the taking apart the story of the Holocaust, what happened there, and showing it wasn't 6 million Jews who died in that war. That people should go and check out some of those really good documentaries. That's not what this film is about. It's also not about all of the great heroic things that the Third Reich did. It doesn't talk about the Strength Through Joy programs. It only briefly touches upon the economic recovery that happened after the National Socialists were elected and they cleaned up what had been Weimar Germany. But this film really just deals with the suffering of so many Germans in so many different ways. Of course, many other people suffered terribly. There were a massive amount of Russian lives lost in that war, massive amount of, in general, Eastern European lives, Anglo-Saxon lives, American lives, all sorts of lives, French lives, Italian lives. But for some reason, the whole narrative has been stuck on only 6 million in particular lives which need to be mourned, when tens and tens of millions of European people lost their lives in absolutely awful ways. It was an absolute travesty for Europe and her people all around the world, what took place in World War II. It was not a good war. White people in general, the white race, lost World War II. And you'll see that all of our lands, even the victors' lands, have been flooded. And those people who went and fought in this good war on the Allied side, they, if they're still alive, will see that their countries are no longer theirs, that their grandchildren are being taught to hate themselves in their schools. So it pretty much is a very monumental event that has shaped everything that's taken place since. And that is essentially why their version of history must be protected by laws that are not in place for any other historical event in all of human history. Everything else is up for question except for the narrative of World War II. That's why it must be dismantled by those of us in America like Tom and myself.
You know, also, one of the misconceptions most people have about World War II was that it was a conflict between Great Britain and France and the U.S. and Germany and versus Germany and Italy and some of the Eastern nations. The fact is, 1933, after Adolf Hitler became leader of Germany, international Jewry declared war upon Germany, boycott, sanctions, which is war by other means, by the way. And so the war began, you might say, in 1933. Now, Hitler... he was almost a magician. He was almost a I don't know, what words would you come up with, Hitler, somebody who could turn around a nation so quickly, simply by asking that nation to believe in itself? Here, the world is going through a devastating depression, people in breadlines, out of work, dying from hunger, and Hitler, within months, weeks it seems, suddenly started turning his nation around. Basically, it was Hitler and the German people raising their heads up, saying, no, we're not going to be led anymore by the international bankers. No, we're not going to be taking orders from the victors at Versailles, that is the British, the Americans, the French. We're going to live our own lives as we should. Thank you. No, we are going to become our own people. We're going to be guardians of ourselves. Okay, well, all right. Hitler did incredible stuff in the first few years of his chancellorship. Incredible. In fact, that was something that the power brokers, the Jewish power grid in the world, could never allow. This example that Nazi Germany was to the rest of the world. And of course, when the Jewish operated tools, the U.S., the U.K., France, Russia, when they did destroy Germany, of course, there was the determination that this would never, ever happen again. And Germany had to be extirpated from the map of the world. It basically had to be destroyed. And quite honestly, even though some of the borders are still there of Germany, mostly that's true. You've got a people that actually hate themselves in Germany right now, are a ghost of what they formerly were. The creativity seems to have been blunted. Certainly the indoctrination has been thorough and total. And so, yes, if that was ever unleashed, if the Germans ever found out what had actually happened to them and why it happened to them, then I think, yes, what Kyle's talking about, it would upset the apple cart. It would certainly turn the world against the victors of World War II, because suddenly – we know why it happened and who was doing what to whom. And that's why it's not going to be a pretty picture here. Nobody's going to just simply roll over and say, oh, yeah, this guy makes a little movie, or this guy writes a little book. Yeah, they're right. We were wrong. Okay, we'll accept it. And
right.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
If necessary, I hear right now that there's a movie, a blockbuster big-time movie coming out to denigrate, vilify, besmirch the Holocaust deniers. That's the term being used. I don't know if any of you guys have heard of
David
that.
David Irving specifically, right? That was what it's going to be about, the film?
I think you're right. Yeah, Hendrik.
Yeah.
But the good news is truth, like I said, it's like a cocaine. It's like a powerful drug. In this case, it's a good drug. Sometimes it's scary, but overall, you can't live without it if you've tasted a little bit of the truth. And with the internet, it's never made truth more lethal.
Yeah.
To the side that's running the show right now. This is a lethal dose of communication. Let's face it. I was on a program just the other day. A host in Holland had myself living. I'm from North America. She was in Europe. And we also had a friend on there who was in Asia talking at once. We had three continents all talking about the same subject. That's lethal. I'm sorry. And so I think our greatest concern right now, I know I'm getting off a little bit, but it should be protecting the internet, because the internet ultimately will set us all free. I really mean that. I'm talking about everybody on Earth, too. It will set us all free.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely, Tom. I think it's important to, of course, keep it in that way. Otherwise, we're going to go back to where we were. But as I was watching the film, you know, you come to realize, too, the lack of nuances in terms of how they viewed at the time, I think, the guilt of the Germans, or I guess their hatred. Point being, we've had a whole story that has been kind of twisted and turned and skewed and added on to. Consequently, a lot of things didn't even take off until after the 70s, for example. But at the time, nonetheless, it seemed to, and that's what I said, it occurred to me when I watched the film, it didn't seem to bother any of the Allied forces, for example, that they might be, you know, raping or murdering or, in other words, going after the German people, even if they were, for example, you know, children that just had been born a couple of years earlier, even if they were even if that child had parents who actually were part of the, you know, the resistance movement or whatever. They were never part of the National Socialist Party, for example, and these kinds of things. It was this blanket kind of just eradication of everyone that seems to be the target. And we tried to find some numbers the other day here just to see how much the population might have changed. But I think one thing that people still don't understand is that it was against the German people. It was not against just the National Socialist Party and what was achieved there. It feels like it was something else behind it. And I think you touched upon it before there, Kyle. There was, and you as well, Tom, in fact, that there was a kind of a way to lift themselves out of the mud that hadn't really been achieved before. And it was almost that something that had to be destroyed because it could be a very dangerous example of what might be able to be done in other countries. I don't know. What do you think, Kyle?
I think that you're right on there. And it was a dangerous example, the success story of Germany, because it could have inspired so many other nations to free themselves and become productive, happy, and not to completely copy exactly what Germany did, but to learn from them, to take some points from their playbook and adapt it to their own people. I don't think that Germany, if it had won World War II, would have become some kind of monoculture. Everybody everywhere would be speaking German. I think what really the revolution there was all about was a people loving itself and the leaders of that people looking out for the best interests of that people, not exploiting them for every last shekel or for every last crumb of bread that they can. And this is obviously very revolutionary to the world leaders. You know, that they are completely against that. This is a system that has set up to enslave us that we currently have. And if you realize that you don't have to go back and forth between right and left, Democrat or Republican or whatever the different variations are in your country, it gives another way. It shows another way that people weren't even really aware of. And that's what needed to be completely demonized. And that's why you have all of this atrocity propaganda, such as the Holocaust story, is so that people don't look beyond that smokescreen as to what was really at the heart of the transformation of Germany. Now, another thing that really happened because of this war was an entirely dysgenic effect upon Europe, a demoralization such that they would not rise up again, such that the survivors had become so pacified, so against war, that they would just roll over and die and become compliant as we are seeing today, or at least as we have seen in past decades. And the warrior stock of these various nations, the best and the brightest, were eliminated. Absolutely eliminate, and that has left us completely susceptible to attack.
Well, you know, even if we take the official story for what it is, then remarkably, that's this guilt then that we're supposed to feel has now extended even to the nations of the victors. I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, it is. And back to the propaganda war that was waged against Germany and its allies, against Germany and Japan, by the way. It is some of the most evil and depraved and words ever spoken, I think. How on earth could your average farm boy from Kansas go over there and do the things he did? How can the typical Russian soldier who, as I know them, really have no special animus toward anyone, go and do what they did? And what I mean by what they did, well, how can the American go and suddenly become a vicious torturer of helpless, disarmed German soldiers or even German women? How could that peasant boy from a village in Russia with no lights, no electricity, no water, a simple-minded little peasant boy, go and rape kids and old people and rape some more? It's because of this vicious, vile propaganda. I'm not one who believes in man's inherent evil. I believe we have to be taught that or convinced that it's beneficial toward us. In other words, that's what the propagandists were doing. This both the film and the book could have easily been subtitled The Powerful Price of Propaganda, because propaganda got millions murdered, got millions raped, got millions enslaved, got millions tortured, And it goes on to this very friggin' day. I mean, let's face it. Every damn movie that comes out, it's whether it's overt or whether it's implied subtly, is a basically hate German type of movie.
Oh yeah.
I saw in Kyle's film. I don't go to these things. I know what they're about. I know who's making the damn movies. The Jews are basically who still to this very day hate Germans and want us to hate them with them. There's some scenes in Kyle's film that I can't even come close to watching, even though this is, I think, they're movies, killing people.
Yeah, it's like this violent porn. Was it Eli Roth? Is that the guy, the Inglorious Bastards? You had a scene from there, right, Kyle?
Torture porn is what he calls it. That's what is passed off as art these days, torture porn.
Yeah.
That's a very good description of it, too, because it's... I'm sorry, but I still do not think most of us will get down in the filth and sewer and wallow in that type of porn, torture porn or murder porn or rape porn, whatever they've got. But nevertheless, in the heat of the time, heat of the moment, the average American and the average Russian and the average Brit did some horrific, terrible things. True. They had Jewish commissars, so to speak, encouraging them to do that. Every unit, every American unit, every Russian unit had these political officers that were encouraging through their own acts or basically telling them to do it, or we'll kill you if you don't. And they, of course, did these terrible things. It couldn't have been done without these willing stooges, these tools, to do these terrible things. But it almost will wake you up at 3 a.m. in a cold sweat when you start thinking about some of the things that occurred during World War II. And Kyle and I both touch upon this in our various ways. Henrik, I'll tell you what. I must tell you, I, prior to this, was a rather passive Christian. I'm not anymore. I'm not religious of any persuasion now. Any God that would allow this to happen, I want no part of. I'm sorry, there's a lot of folks out there, I'm sure, that hear what I'm saying and probably will dismiss everything else I say afterwards, but that's the fact. When I read about the things that were done, and there was no one to stop them, no one to help. In other words, the Germans are basically at the mercy of the enemy. That's what Kyle's movie's about. That's what my book is about. They're at the mercy. They're mostly helpless, mostly disarmed, and there is not a damn person in this world to help them. Every once in a while, a miracle happens, but it damn sure didn't come from the Allied leaders. The Allied leaders are some of the most vicious pack of wolves I've ever read about in my life, and they have their damn nerve to be having their 70th Grand Goomba right now, the 70th anniversary of victory in Europe. The sons and daughters and the grandsons and granddaughters are having this wonderful victory celebration. Oh, boy. Hey, I wish they knew what really happened. I wonder how many would show up for that if they knew what happened. Enough of them would, I guarantee you. But
well, the thing there, though, is that they think that the German people deserved it. I mean, and that's really the heart of the matter, is that despite the fact that, you know, as I said before, that a lot of the things that were going on weren't known until many years after, and then due to, you know, how they pieced everything together and reconstructions, and now we have this whole story, it seems like, which is completely out of whack with reality. But at the time, you know, many of these things were not known. But despite that, it was still... I guess a view within the various militaries that charged against Germany from different countries that, you know, they needed to take care of this problem in any means necessary, and they sure did, didn't they?
You know, anybody who says that the Germans got what they deserved after watching Kyle's movie or reading my book, anyone who can say that has no soul. They simply have no soul, or they're so eaten out with hate and evil that, for all intents and purposes, they still have no soul. Anyone who can say that, there's a special place in hell for them. Now, would I like to see it tried out on them, the same stuff they're saying Germans got what they deserved? No, not really, because it's so depraved and so bestial. No, I wouldn't wish that upon even these individuals who say that Germans got... I'm just going to chalk this up to ignorance. How about that? I'm going to suggest that they don't know what they're talking about. They've never seen a child run through a street on fire with flames all over him from the napalm that's been dropped on him by Americans and British. They've never seen that, screaming through the streets, or a woman being raped 100 times that night, bleeding from the vagina, bleeding from being beaten up in the face from one Soviet after another, raping her and sodomizing her and being vicious. They've never seen the people who came back from the Jewish torture pens in Poland after the war. The ones who, the rare few who actually came home alive from these hells, these Jewish torture pens, slobbering down their chin, who have become anything but human. They did survive, yes. They came back alive, yes. But they're not human anymore. If they could see the eyes of these people, the void in those eyes, I'm almost positive 90% of the people wouldn't say they got what they deserve.
Now, let me ask you guys here. We're going to take a break in a little bit, and before we do that, obviously, we want to give out all the details, how people can watch the film, how they can, you know, get copies of it, and we'll talk about the book a little bit as well and some of the other things you guys have available and what you're up to at the moment. But let me just ask you about Russia for a little bit, because they have also I've watched in the last few days here the ramp up to this month here in May and the 70th anniversary, then, if you will, and see how they kind of have their own little project going on, waging a kind of a propaganda war, I guess, with the West and the old dynamic of the of allies, you know, versus the Soviets is kind of coming back, despite that they were, you know, fighting on the same side. But the image that I've seen kind of started to formulate is that, you know, the Soviet Union and Stalin were the liberators. They were the saviors. They were those who freed the world from evil. I don't know if you guys have paid attention to this. I've seen it on a couple of English websites that come out of Russia. And if so, if you guys have seen it, any comments on that?
Yeah, I'll say that I've seen it, and it's to be expected, I guess. And if you look at even just the run-up the past few years in the way that the Russian government has outlawed criticism of the Red Army and also outlawed Holocaust denial as well. It just seems like it's all part of this effort to rebrand the Soviet Union as something that was glorious and that didn't do anything wrong. That was actually fighting the good fight.
Exactly. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable, isn't it? The way they've, That old cat is out of the bag. You know, I watched this the piece that come out from Kronos. I'll add a link to it. This remarkable footage from 2 months after the war, 1945, and you see a huge image in the beginning of the film of Stalin being erected on the eastern side of Berlin, and that makes you realize what it was all about. You know, it was a very much of a symbolic act of taking that presence of. You know, you have it even on the website, Kyle, the flag that needed to be raised above, I think it's Berlin, right? Or is it Dresden? With the hammer and the sickle on it. That was the prime.
Berlin.
Yeah, was it Berlin? Yeah, that's the prime objective here, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the Russians, the fact is we let them down in 1917. America did send an expeditionary force there because we could see what was happening even from afar. But the fact is we let them go. We let the Jews, the Jewish Bolsheviks, take over, take control of Russia. And for the next 30 years, they bled that country white, killed off its leadership, turned the clock backs on the peasants, actually. My heart goes out to Russia probably as much as any country in the world. It's like Kyle mentioned when we started this. Every country that succumbed lost its leadership. Russia, Poland, Germany, Eastern Bloc nations. They were killed, murdered, put away in prison so they couldn't lead. Let's put it that way, the ones that weren't killed. And so you have this leaderless mass of people, as we have in Russia right now. I'm not saying Putin is not a leader. In fact, I think he's the right man in the right place right now for these people. But still, where is the sense of outrage? Where are the people in Russia right now showing the other side of that war?
Right.
Showing the millions of Germans who were repatriated against their wishes at the end of the war, had to go back, face death, face slavery in Siberia. The millions, we're talking 5 million Russians, that were sent back by the Americans and British after the Americans and British said they would not send them back, repatriate them to Stalin's gulags and his his torture palaces in Moscow. These people aren't real excited about, I'm sure, that you know, if they were alive, they wouldn't be real excited about the victory celebration in Russia. There are so many skeletons in so many closets right now that one movie and one book certainly are not going to cover it all, as Kyle mentioned. And we hope, I suppose Kyle would agree with me right now. If nothing else, I hope his film and I hope my book has encouraged others to explore this and to go where others have not gone before. That's what history is about. It's not regurgitating the same Victor's version of history over and over and over, or making a film based upon the so-called Good War and the Greatest Generation over and over ad nauseum. It's about searching, researching new ground, finding out the truth about every conflict. You know, unless we absolutely learn from these things, yes, we are doomed to repeat it, and we are repeating it right now. I tend to get up on a soapbox, guys. Have you noticed that lately? It sounds like I'm giving a stump speech. I guess I cannot speak normally anymore. But
it's all good, Tom. Don't worry about it. That's why we have you here. You know, we want to hear what you have to say. So go ahead.
Well, it feels good to laugh after so much so much grim material here, and you know, Kyle's only had 90 minutes to work with. And so there's no levity in that movie. It's very serious and deep and profound and prophetic, I'll say. But thank goodness a 400-page book has a little latitude for humor. And well, let me give you one account that did make it into the book. Stalin was he was paranoid. He wrote the book on being paranoid. But not only did he get 5 million Russians repatriated, thanks to good old FDR and good old Winston Churchill, 5 million who were almost instantly killed the moment the Russians got their hands on him or sent to Siberian mines. But virtually everybody else who had fought the good war, including now famous people like Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who actually fought for Stalin, found themselves sitting in gulags after the war.
Well, that's just it. You know, what has happened in Germany has happened in many other places before, and if we, you know, just as you gentlemen have been talking about, if we don't speak up and get the right side up here, it's gonna happen again and just continue happen again, and we have to stop that. But gentlemen, I want to take a short break here in a little bit and then continue talking more in the second. There's so many more aspects, not only to the film but the surrounding things that is going on that I want to get into with both of you. But Kyle, then, if people want to view the film and get a slice of the other side of one of the most covered up areas in modern history, tell us where people can go. Give us the website where people can get DVD copies if they want, and everything else we need to know about the film.
And definitely. The website is hellstormdocumentary.com. And in addition to going there and sharing it with your friends and family and maybe even setting up screenings, I'd also like to encourage people to perhaps call in to various radio shows and to call into C-SPAN and challenge different people on Twitter to debunk what is being shown in Hellstorm, to get a review from them, and just to do anything they can to get this truth known.
Yeah, very good. Hellstorm Documentary is the website. Tell us about Renegade as well, Kyle.
People can listen to me every Sunday night on RenegadeBroadcasting.com. We've got a show every night of the week, and I also publish on RenegadeTribune.com.
All right, very good. We'll have those linked up. And then, Tom, let's switch over to you here. And, of course, the book we're talking about is Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, 1944 to 1947. Where can we go if we want to pick up copies of the book?
Go right now to Amazon.com. They have not only the paperback, but the Kindle version of the book. Or they can touch with me, mtgoodrich@aol.com. That's my email address and my PayPal ID, mtgoodrich@aol.com. And ask me about the book, and I'll send you a cheaper copy than even Amazon sells.
Well, that's nice. Tell us about the latest one you have about as well, Rape Hate. Takes some of the stories from Hellstorm as well. Or tell us more about the book.
Yeah, Rape Hate. People have quite honestly, the component most talked about, most asked about of Hellstorm has been the rape component. It seems unbelievable. It just seems to just defy gravity that there could be so much evil. We're talking millions of women raped millions of times, basically. And so the book Rape Hate is in response to that curiosity, or that almost incredible part of World War II. But yes, Rape Hate is not just about World War II. It actually starts during the Indian Wars and what it was like to be a white woman captured by Indians on the plains. And it certainly was not the Steven Spielberg approach to captivity. It was not the Dances with Wolves approach. It was about torture. It was about rape and prostitution and beatings and on and on. And then the book goes, even talks about the Japanese. You know, the Americans were raping on a vast scale in Japan, as they were doing in Europe at the time. And so it's about that. And it also talks about a very important person to me, a young lady. You know, you've been talking so much about the forest that I'd like to take the book down to the one individual small tree about one woman who was abducted, raped, and murdered. And that's it, the book mostly. It's about rape, unfortunately, and what a pernicious disease and plague we are going through right now with rape in the United States and Europe. What is it, in Sweden, I think one in four women will be raped.
That's the rape by a Muslim capital of the world, you know. Sweden is, yeah, it's up there. I think at number three right now, topping the list, yeah.
I would love to see capital punishment be brought back in the United States. It'll never happen in to Sweden because the leaders are the worst possible people you could have for leaders, quite honestly.
Yep, so they are.
That is not going to happen. But, yes, that's Ray Payton. Thanks for asking me about it. It's a new book, by the way. It just came out about a week or 2 weeks ago, I think.
I will have the links up to that. People can read through from more of there. We're going to take a break here now. But just, Kyle, by the way, one last thing here. Is there anybody of the of your co-talented people who helped on the film that you want to give a shout-out to, by the way?
Oh, well, there are so many people who did the voiceovers and people who contributed music to the film and people who I gave a special thanks to. But in particular, I'd say the main people who contributed the most to the film are seen at the beginning credits, and, of course, that would be Tom, who is really the foundations of this film. But also Sinead McCarthy, who was a guest on Radio 314. She narrated the film and did a great job, made this, I think, very accessible to women especially and to a younger crowd.
Yeah, great job.
And Oscar Turner did the graphics that people will find so impressive throughout the film. A very talented young man who was very dedicated to this cause. And that's it without going into having to go through a long list of people who did a great job to make this film what it is.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, Oscar did a great job there, too. I know he's using Element. It's a good job, Oscar, so very good. All right, folks, we'll take a short break here. Stay with us, guys. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back, everybody. We are speaking with Tom Goodridge and Kyle Hunt about Hellstorm, the latest film by Kyle, and the book, of course, by the same name from Tom. And please take a look at the film for the sake of the victims of this horrible war, and learn about the other side if you do anything at all, if you're interested in not only history, but what actually happened during the Second World War, and also how this played out, so that you can consider who the real victims were here. It can be very difficult to watch some of this material. It is heartbreaking, and it can be gut-wrenching for sure, but I think we owe it to those people. There is so many things in the film and the material overall that comes out of the book that we should speak more about, but I wanted to spend some time speaking about the lead-up to the Wilhelm Gustloff and the ship and the very way that a lot of Germans fled from the peripheries of Germany at the time all the way up to the the Baltic. There was just a tremendous movement of people at the time. And either of you guys who want to speak a little bit about that, but maybe we can inform our audience a little bit about just what a massive movement of victims of the war there were, you know, civilians that were heading up towards the Baltic to escape the Red Army under horrible conditions. Tom, maybe you can tell us more about this.
Yes, Henrik. It was indeed one of the largest movements of human beings in all of recorded history. The impetus, the energizer behind that, of course, was the Red Army and their atrocities committed by the Red Army, beginning, of course, with Nemersdorf in East Prussia. As Kyle's already touched upon, it was an atrocity so evil and so vicious and so total. And the Swedes and the Spaniards and the Swiss, they were called in to see this. In other words, the Germans wanted the world to see what the Soviet army did in Germany. They were brought in to tell the world, and they did. Bless their hearts, they were all neutral countries. But nobody cared. At that late stage of the war, the propaganda war against Germany had become so effective that people just didn't give a damn about brain German babies or raped women or men sawed in half who tried to protect them, of the Polish workers and French workers who tried to protect the people or were killed themselves. And so you've got people slaughtered. But that's just the beginning. In fact, that's how the book begins, and Kyle covers it in his movie. But when the Russians finally did break through on many fronts and started pushing the Germans west, then that's when the propaganda of people like Ilya Ehrenberg, the Jewish writer who encouraged the Russian army to do the worst it possibly could in Germany, that is, kill, loot, plunder, destroy, and above all, rape. Rape, rape. And when you're through raping, kill the victim, if you haven't already killed her. Basically, it's some of the most evil words ever put to paper. And this command, this order to do these terrible things in Germany came fluttering down from airplanes onto the red lines, onto the Red Army, so that they knew what was expected of them. It was not only encouraged, and it was almost a patriotic duty to do this, according to Ehrenberg and Stalin. Well, anyway, to make a very long story short right now, that's why the people were escaping, just dropping what they were doing, leaving their homes even unlocked, fleeing into this terrible winter that the winter of 45 was, 20 and 30 degree below zero weather, and trying to find a way out of this, trying to escape, escape to other parts of Germany where the Red Army wasn't. And many people were cut off, of course, millions. And the only egress they had was the Baltic beachheads, the enclaves, the cauldrons, they called them back then, where the German army held out so that the civilians could reach them at these ports, Gotenhafen and Danzig and Memel and places like that, and hopefully be rescued by ship. That was the only way out. Everyone knew it. And we have millions of people suddenly appearing at these port cities on the Baltic with nothing, almost nothing, old men, women, children, freezing to death. The weather doesn't get them. The bombs, the strafing of the Russian airplanes will. Trying to get on anything that floats and escape to the parts of Germany that have not yet been invaded. That is around Lübeck and Hamburg, places like that. And so you've got this incredibly, I want to say chaotic, but actually, even in its most desperate strait, it wasn't total chaos. The Germans still had some organization, but you have people getting on board these ships, these freighters, and these former fancy liners, passenger liners, to escape into this Baltic, where chunks of ice in the bay is actually freezing over. And
yeah, it does when it's really cold, by the way. I remember the few times it does. But, yeah, so there was a really harsh winter in 1945, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got, like wolves, the Soviet submarines patrolling. And it's just like the Americans and the British in the West, who are bombing everything they can possibly bomb and kill, women and children below. Well, the Russians are also trying to do this with their submarines, seeking every ship that floats, because there's no German Navy on the Baltic at this late stage, just some very small vessels, and many of these ships that are carrying 2 and 3 and 4 and maybe even as much as 10,000 refugees are not. They're far too large to be considered naval vessels. So it's not mistaken identity. They're actually trying to kill as many fleeing refugees as possible. And they did a very good job of it, by the way. In fact, the Wilhelm Gustloff, which Kyle brings to life, unfortunately, I mean that tongue-in-cheek, of course, because yeah. It's important that we know about it. It went down. Russians sent 3 torpedoes into its side the night it left its port to try to reach Germany. And actually, the ship held for a while, and then it finally rolled over and started sinking. And only a few hundred people escaped from this, but the estimates are anywhere from 7,000 to 9,000 people didn't escape. They drowned. And that, of course, just shrinks into almost nothing. This is the Lusitania with 1,200 people, the Titanic with 1,500 people. You've got a ship that went down with perhaps as many as 9,000, mostly women and children and old people. But that's not the only one. As Kyle knows, there are other ships going down. In fact, the Russians apparently didn't have enough submarines out there because there's quite a few rescue ships that do escape, only to dock in various towns and suffer bombing raids from Americans and British. And one ship that actually escaped the submarines, and I'm sure the people thought they were home free when it docked in Schinemunde, I believe. The moment it docked, it got hit by a bomb from a British airplane, and as it was tied up, it went to the bottom just almost immediately, and 2,000 people died, even in that one little almost people know nothing about. At one little sinking, more people died in that than died in the Titanic or the Lusitania.
Yeah. Wow, it's just amazing. Well, I mean, Kyle, you show that in the film, too, how obviously, you know, women and children, they rather take the chance to freeze to death by moving more towards the Baltic than to stay, obviously, when the Red Army is moving. And do you think the word spread about the horrors of what was going on? They just maybe instinctively knew? I mean, who knows what was known at the time and how much the word spread about this? What do you think?
Well, it seems that a lot of people didn't believe the words of Goebbels. They thought he was exaggerating when he said what would happen if the Russians, the Soviets, which includes the Mongols as well, the Asiatics, what would happen if they overtook Germany? They just all thought he was exaggerating as some kind of wartime propaganda. But when the reality of the situation became known to them, they did everything they could to take themselves and their loved ones as far from it as possible. Obviously, anybody would. And it was just such treacherous conditions that they went out into. It was just the worst timing possible. And as is mentioned in the film, some of them were overtaken by those invading Soviets, and the tanks just rolled right over them. They had no regard for any lives, any German lives. And not just German lives, any lives that stood in their way. There's an account that I didn't include in the film of a German woman who was freed from Auschwitz. Freed. What does that really mean? She was raped over and over again by the Soviets. They didn't care that she was a Jewish survivor of Auschwitz. So this was just a plague of locusts that was coming and just decimating everything. That video is actually available. People can probably find that if they look hard enough for rape survivors. A woman talking about that, how she was just raped over and over again by these. It's a disgrace to animals to call these Soviets animals. This is subhuman what was taking place. It was just sickening. But this is what obviously inspired people to just go into, you know, even situations that seemed almost like certain death, to take the chance of dying at sea, of dying in the freezing cold, to get away from this monstrosity.
You know, also, Kyle mentioned it was like a plague, and it's true. The propaganda you put these things together. For instance, you've got these soldiers that have fought for the last 3 years in Russia itself, last 2 years actually, fighting against Germany. And yes, there were still some love of the motherland. Forget communism. Forget the Jewish leadership, the Bolsheviks. It's a love of your land. You were fighting to preserve your nation. And so when you understand that, and when you see your village destroyed, yes, it was a terrible war. And yes, villages get destroyed, whether you want them to be destroyed or not. And if you see your village destroyed, perhaps your house burned down. Or if you see your dad taken out because some partisan group had killed a couple of Germans on the edge of town, and the common riposte or the common reaction of the Germans is to take the first 50 people they find, men that is, and shoot them down because they cannot deal with this guerrilla war, people shooting them as soon as they turn their backs. And when you have enough excesses like that, you've got young soldiers who are really angry, really pissed off. And when they finally get to Germany, and here is the propaganda from people like Ilya Ehrenberg, here is the, as I mentioned, this whole scenario of the Germans in their country, Russia doing that, then you've got a plague. You've got a people who not only hear what Ehrenberg is saying, but they're actually living up what Ehrenberg says. Raping, raping, raping. Drinking, destroying, burning, killing. And when I mean killing, not just humans, animals. Killing them too wantonly, without any regard whatsoever. There's an account in there of one guy who just walks up to a cow and plunges his knife into its throat. And you've got people dynamiting carp ponds. Carp ponds, ponds with carps in them, just because they're German. You've got them cutting down entire orchards. I mean, it's almost incredible, and yes, it is plague-like. And, of course, after the war, of course, the plague reached its grand climax when the Russians, down to the very last nuts and bolts, actually shipped most of eastern Germany back to Russia. That is the factories. We have truly, we have never, ever experienced anything like this in world history, this abomination that was World War II.
Well, you know, Tom, we spoke about this last time you were on when we were talking about Hellstorm, the first show we did together. And, you know, despite the propaganda, I mean, you make a good, you know, case here, if you will, that you know, when you see maybe your own village being destroyed in this manner, and you're in the heat of the battle, you work yourself into a different kind of personality. Who knows, maybe you're even traumatized and all these things. But despite that, and we tried to get to this last time as well, but despite all those things, it's difficult to wrap your head around why some of these men and teenage boys, in some cases too, did to women and children. And it's unbelievable to us to get into that, to understand why this happened. I mean, I guess there's nothing we can say, really. Nothing justifies it, of course, but just where the anger came from, where the resentment, I mean, and that the propaganda worked on top of it. It's amazing, isn't it?
Let me say this real quick, and Kyle, I'm sure he's got something to add to it. Yes, it does seem pervasive. It does seem enormous, and it was, truly was, but not everybody did this. You have good people on all sides, of course. It would seem as if you have one evil person doing the most sadistic and soulless things possible. You can have 10 or 100 follow after him, and you still remember that one sadist, that one vicious, depraved monster who did what he did, and that will negate the good work of the next 10 guys, 20
sure.
who come along.
Yeah,
and I've got to believe. You know, I have to believe this, or I'm going to go crazy. I have to believe that. Most people are motivated out of goodness and honesty, because if we don't, we might as well just have World War III and get it over with. Might as well just kill everybody here, because there are so many. Let me say this while we're on that subject. I don't want to drop it. Yes, more than enough people did the most terrible things on both fronts. The Americans were doing virtually the same thing. We just had a better PR program over there of covering up the crimes committed over there. Americans were killing Germans right and left. Hold up your hands. That's a great way to have yourself killed. In other words, virtually very few Germans were actually captured while the war was going on. They were killed. Old men, boys in the Home Guard. And you've got Americans raping up and down, raping. You've got them doing other terrible, terrible things. including the French and the British and the their colonial troops, by the way. But you've also got people who just who seem to have a conscience, have a soul, even though they're 18 years old. They're just not into that stuff. I mean, they just refuse to do it. I've known them. I was in the military once. I mean, yeah, there's plenty of guys at 18 who were soulless. I'm telling you straight. It's like they don't have any conscience. They don't give a rat's. They don't really don't care.
Right.
I mean, they're vicious, depraved thugs. But then you've got guys that wouldn't do it. Even if you put a gun to their head, they wouldn't do things like that. And there's the one account, Kyle. I don't think it's in the movie. But because you can't give everything in the movie. But it's the torture pens, the American Jewish-run torture pens at the end of the war, when the war was over. And you've got Germans just being tortured right and left, male and female. Doesn't matter whether they were Nazi or not Nazi. It didn't matter. They were Germans. That was good enough. And the Jews who came back, the 39ers with the Americans, could speak German, understood the culture, and, of course, they hated Germans with a passion. And so they made perfect executioners and torturers, and that's exactly what they did. There's no reason for the torture that they inflicted upon these people. They could have gotten anything they wanted, basically, if they just in other words, it was just basically contrived, sadistic.
Yeah.
But there's this scene in the book of a German, a soldier, who had been tortured and his teeth knocked out, and every bone in his body seems to be aching or broken. And he's walking back to his cell. He's limping back to his cell, and a guard's with him. And, of course, he's still groggy from the beating he just got. And the guard kicks him in the butt when the prisoner misses his door. In other words, just kicks him into the cell. And the man determined right then that he was going to end his life. He was going to take out the razor blade he had hid in his bunk bed and slash his wrist because he couldn't take any more of this. I think the worst part of it was he didn't even know why he was being tortured.
Right.
Because he was a German. But just at that moment when he was having this epiphany, in came an American soldier. He could see him in the dim light, and he shushed him with his finger and said, "I saw what happened." And the little guy, the little American private, reached in his pocket and brought out several boiled potatoes and put them in this prisoner's hand. You know, that's the kind of person I like to hang my hat on. Even if he's one in a thousand, I still want to focus on that one person with that good heart that wouldn't do terrible deeds.
Tom, who knows, maybe his parents or grandparents were German who immigrated from Germany, for example, over to the States. Who knows, right?
Yes. You know, but we're back to this, Henry. I have to believe that, because if I don't believe that, I will pray every day for World War III and just to get rid of us, because we're obviously living in hell and we're the devil's spawn, unless I believe in that one good person. And by the way, not just Americans, there were many Russians who did some things. Yes, it's true. The Russians, and especially the second echelon, the Mongols, the Asiatics, as Kyle mentioned, did horrific stuff. But there were also pathetic little instances of some of the most incredible sweet things, honest things, to protect people, to stop what was going on without getting your own brains blown out. You know, there's no limit to the goodness, but there's also no limit to evil, I don't believe.
Right.
It's, you know, Kyle will back me up on this, I think. I have never been the same person since I wrote that book, researched and wrote that book. I don't know why. I'll tell you what, I don't sleep very well. I've had a problem most of my life, quite honestly, but this is different. And I'm always aware of all my situations, all my environments from now on. I think there's such a dread of something like that happening to me that I'm always on the QV, so to speak. It's like I become a very, I don't want to say unhappy, but suddenly the world is, so many people comment when they see the movie or read the book, they say, "I'm different." I mean, there was me before the book and the movie, and now there's me after the book and the movie. It's because there's a transformation that takes place. And even though it's, I think most people would say instinctively, it's not a good transformation, I think ultimately it will be a good transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to be brought face to face with reality, the truth.
Yeah.
And by golly, You know, that's what this is all about, is the truth, so that we never repeat these mistakes.
Yep. I agree. Well, let us know if you want to add something, Kyle. Otherwise, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the open air death camps that Eisenhower set up. For those who don't know, maybe you can tell us about that a little bit.
I'll just add quickly that there are atrocities that are committed that are very up close and personal, such as the rape or torture. The atrocities that are committed that are a little bit distanced are oftentimes psychologically easier for people to deal with, such as the firebombing. When that's done from a high altitude, you're not seeing the people in the streets running around on flames, people being melted into the asphalt. It's a bit easier for those pilots. But when they're closer to the ground, when they can see what's going on, it's suddenly becomes much more real. And the psychological devastation of the people who committed some of these acts, such as the American troops, it affected them terribly for the rest of their lives. Yeah. That's one of the big reasons a lot of people didn't want to even talk about the war. You'd think if they had gone and done some heroic thing, some great act of heroism, where they were conquering the evil, bad Germans who were just the epitome of evil, they're just the living monstrosities on Earth, that they would want to gloat about it and tell some stories to their children. No.
Yeah.
Most people who came out of that good war really were never the same people. They were very heavily scarred by what took place there. And, of course, not many of them talked about the atrocities they committed. Nobody wanted to document it either. Nobody was going around and asking them for those stories. So hopefully this film will start some kind of healing process, because these wounds from World War II, they keep getting opened, reopened, and reopened each successive year with all of the different propaganda that's put out about it. And hopefully this time we can start to heal after this. You know, I said that Hollywood is pretty much in the business of digging up dead Germans just so they can be killed again. You see these video games with zombie Nazis, you know, running around. You've got to shoot them. And every year you've got new evil, bad Nazis to kill in the movies.
Yep.
It's just so sickening. Can we finally lay these victims, these poor people, to rest and finally recognize that what happened to them, they did not deserve, that no one deserves it, and that perhaps now they can rest in peace?
Yeah, well said. I mean, it's become a religion to them to a certain extent. This is the time when, you know, when Satan visited the earth and we defeated, I mean, this is literally what it's kind of turned into, more or less. This is one of the main pillars of the new religiosity of our times, and it's all predicated on this. And what happens then if we come to a point where we realize that the majority of everything that we've been told around this is complete fabrication and lies? I mean, that upsets the whole image and the whole world as it's structured almost right now, and even the reasoning for why some of the things that are happening today in our world, that, you know, we can't have, you know, too many white people congregating in the same area because, you know, then it turns into the Nazi party again, right? I mean, all these might sound stupid and ridiculous, but to a certain extent, this portion of history is a weapon that is being used against Europeans, including, as I said before, those who actually are, you know, were fighting the Germans, right, Kyle?
Oh, yeah. Recently, a top Jewish rabbi actually said that basically the whole Western world is culpable for the Holocaust. So even the descendants of the Allied victors in Great Britain and the United States, they're actually responsible for that Holocaust because they and their ancestors didn't do enough to stop it. And we can't let white people ever stand up for themselves again, or else there will be another Shoah. That's pretty much how their logic goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's the good news, guys, is that it's having less and less impact. More and more people are realizing this industry, this Holocaust industry, for what it really is, a gigantic scam. And it's, I go back to the I go back to the well. I consider the internet the reason why so many people are now turning away from this. It's been stuffed down our throats like a Strasburg duck for so long that we're starting to spit it back out. It doesn't make any sense. And then you have examples like the recent slaughter fest in Gaza, in which you have people outside drinking pop and eating popcorn and laughing and applauding at the slaughter of roughly 2,000 women and children, probably more than that. But people see that. They understand that. And they want us to be sorry for them in the so-called Holocaust, the same people who are elated and titillated by beheaded children from bombs provided by Americans. And so it's running out of steam, but I suppose it's like any other thing. It's worked in the past, and not being very creative, these people imagine it'll continue to work forever. I got news for them. It's not going to. It's actually starting to wind down right now. It becomes more preposterous. In fact, you've got people who I tend to watch and listen to what people are saying. You've got people who actually wish the Holocaust was true. Because there would be 6 million less Jews to slaughter Palestinians. It'd be 6 million less to steal Palestinian land. It'd be 6 million less to stoke one war after another. 6 million less to blast and burn Middle Eastern Arab neighbors, and 6 million less to buy the U.S. Congress, 6 million less to promote porn around the globe, you know, on and on. And so you've got people reacting, or what's the word I'm searching for? Basically, people just saying that's enough of this bull. We're just not buying it anymore. Say all you want. I think it's, you know, if I was running the show, I'd certainly switch gears. I would send it in another direction, but not the same old BS. It actually, it's the worst tactic they could probably use, this nonsense, because, you know, what are we, the second and third and fourth generations after World War II? Many people are just divorced from it. They're not involved. They're not invested in it. And so, wait a minute, it's sort of like blaming me for the Indian Wars. Nice try on that one, because I'm certainly not going to feel any angst or any shame for what happened 100 years ago. But let them continue. Let them waste the resources on such things as this. I think it's counteractive right now, personally.
Well, it seems to have been certain things then at the time that were occurring how everything kind of came together after the war that were, I guess, exaggerations that weren't that clever. I mean, I doubt that at the time when all these things were happening and formulating, and again, who knows what was discussed at Yalta, for example, in February before the, you know, just a couple of months before the war ended, what things were agreed upon between, you know, Uncle Joe and, you know, FDR and Churchill and whatnot. We can only speculate, I guess, to a certain extent of what went on behind closed doors there. But some of the things that occurred that were you know, kind of there were exaggerations. That's what I'm getting at. That they probably never knew that we would be able to be in a position where we could re-examine the material in the mm-hmm. way we do now. That we would have the internet at our disposal. We could look at footage, we could look at in trying to validate the so-called evidence and see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And I think at the time that's why they did what they did. They overstepped their boundaries, if you will, a little bit. They never realized that people will be able to sit in 70 years from now and examine some of these things and make sure that it doesn't add up. I mean, and that's pretty remarkable in itself, but I guess that's their downfall to a certain extent, that they were just, that it's built on lies that at some time, I believe anyway, I'm a believer in the truth, that is going to get out at some point. And, you know, who knows what the repercussions from that will be. But that's one thing in the film as well, Kyle, that we never realized that so much film material would be available. And who knows what's not available. The Kronos, as I said before, might have 7 million feet of footage available, and who knows what's on there that could aid in the battle to get to the truth, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I don't really want to see a lot of the footage that is kept hidden from us, to be honest. Tom knows it's out there. I know it's out there. You know it's out there. Everybody should know that there's a lot of footage. If what I was able to find, it was publicly available. Just think about some of the depraved and disgusting footage that was kept by these the torture masters, people who really got off on seeing the German people degraded, destroyed, and just decimated in every single way. So it probably will come to light in some way in the future. You see new things being released all the time. And I really just I want the world to know that there are two sides to every story, and we haven't gotten this one at all. We're just starting to scratch the surface.
You're right.
Of the other side here.
Just like we're the first men on Mars. We've taken a few steps, and now we have to explore the entire world of Mars and then perhaps establish some colonies. You're right, Kyle. You know, also one thing that the powers that be, the Jewish supremacists have done is the pressure on European countries forbidding any discussion of what we're talking about right now. You know, a person can end up in prison over there for saying the things we're saying right now. The fact is, only a lie needs protection. In truth, it will stand like an oak. I think even the dumbest person out there understands that. What's this about a law? I can't say, I can't speak anything about a certain thing. I believe that suddenly starts registering with people. They suddenly start understanding wait a minute. Maybe this lie is not, maybe this so-called truth, this religion is not a religion or truth at all. Maybe it's a lie. And then when you start putting things together, you know, honestly, I want the Jews of the world to stop sucking us dry, stop usurping our governments, stop this form of aid that the Holocaust has become. You know, the Germans have given Israel trillions of marks and now euros. And the United States has done the same, the country that supposedly liberated them. Trillions of dollars. I mean, you know, you don't have, if you're a Jew living in Israel, I'm sorry, you don't have to actually work. You get enough money. I believe that. I believe it's a form of welfare they've got going now. In 70 years, trillions of guilt money has been extorted from Germany and U.S. and virtually every white nation in Europe. Every white nation in the world. Isn't that true? But that mendacity is coming to an end, and I think simply that we're talking about it. Every day there are more and more people coming over, and I think
how long is that going to go on, Tom? I mean, how much? 100 years? 200 more years? When is it going to end?
I've got my own ideas about this. I think it's ending right now. It seems to be going slow, but it's actually going really fast. 5 years ago, my jury was still out on this. 5 years ago, I was, I had my doubts, but then again, I wasn't alive then. I didn't see it with my own eyes, and I don't have time to research everything on Earth. And so, more or less, I went along with it. Now I'm convinced it didn't happen. I'm actually absolutely convinced. I'm convinced that what happened was basically what we're talking about right now. Yes, Jews were a fifth column, those who remained in Germany and the occupied countries. You could not allow a fifth column running loose in times of war. When you are fighting for your survival, I'm sorry, freedoms are out the door. When the war is over, we'll have some more freedoms, but while the war is on, we cannot take a chance of you doing something seditious, something that gets the rest of us killed. So you're going to a concentration camp. If you're Jews, you've already proven that you probably are going to be a fifth column. If you're gypsies, if you're a thieving bunch of gypsies, we're not going to allow you to run around stealing vital resources from us, as you've done in the past. If you're a communist, you're going into a prison camp too, because you've proved that you're a suspect. And so I believe that once the war was over, what they did was just turn it right back around. The American and Jewish torture pens were suddenly projected upon the Germans. The atrocities that were committed were by the Americans and especially the Russians were turned back upon the Germans themselves. In other words, we've got the world's greatest projection going on. By the way, I believe projection was a Jewish term first started by Sigmund Freud, the psychologist, psychoanalyst. Projection. Yeah. Basically, if you've got something you want covered up, the best defense is an active offense. Blame your enemy for your own crimes.
Right.
They have a burden of proof on their side because, after all, their defeated enemy. They've got very little voice here. And so what better place to put it than on the enemy's head, your own crimes? And that's what I think it is, as simple as that.
So it's been completely just flipped on its head, basically, 180.
That's what I believe.
Wow. And that's that speaks to the subtitle of the film as well, Kyle, right?
Yes. The subtitle, for those who don't know, is Exposing the Real Genocide of Nazi Germany. Now, a lot of people don't like me using the word Nazi, as it's viewed as something of a pejorative, but it's commonly understood by people, and it has a bit of a sensational value because we get so much propaganda about Nazis. So I do feel like it's an effective subtitle. But anybody else out there who's going to post about this, they want to rename it. I've seen some people calling it to the real genocide of Germany or things like that. You know, please feel free to kind of rebrand it in whatever way for your own audience. But things have really been flipped on their head. We're told that we were freed from the tyranny of Nazi Germany. Now, I'd have to ask, are we really free if we have to fork over a huge percentage of our earnings every single year to a government that doesn't serve our interests, that actually does everything in its power to serve alien interests? Are we really free if we can't even move our bodies in ways that we want? I mean, I'm referring here to the Roman salute, the Sieg Heil salute, as some would know it. If you can't even move your arm in a certain way that's found offensive or hateful, are you really free? If you can't move your arm in a certain way without getting thrown in jail, are you really free? No, we're living in a Soviet gulag state right now. It's just not as bad as it could be.
How about doing five for just simply questioning something? If you're a French or German person talking, and I don't think I really understand that. Maybe they didn't do quite as much to the Jews as they did. You're doing 5 years hard time because you simply said something like that. That's not freedom, hey, I got to tell you. That's slavery, guys.
Or Sylvia Stoltz defending her client, Ernst Zundel.
Yep.
She just defended him too well. She gets thrown in prison. She goes out and talks about it. And just for talking about it in a different country, back into prison.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the reality of the situation here, that they have to keep the lid on no matter what. And they will, I guess, keep doing it until more and more people get in trouble for it. And then eventually, you know, as sad as that is and as unfortunate as that is, hopefully it aids in bringing this kind of to the larger awareness. Not that they write that much about it in the press, but people know who are interested in some of these things and why it occurs, that that more and more people who are just being outspoken about it might end up in trouble. But if they do, you know, hopefully it helps to get the word out there. And because at the end of it, just as you said, Tom, I mean, that's like, I just want to get to the truth of the matter here. You know, what really happened, and can we, and if something happened, which is unpopular, can we get to that anyway? You know, it's like, this is, it's so ridiculous to have this kind of enforcement on the legal level as it is here. And I guess nothing is going to change until the legal structure changes, that these are not crimes, these are legitimate questions that many, many people have asked and I think will continue to ask, rightly so.
We're on the tipping point, Henrik. I'm very confident in that. I can say that with certitude because I'm talking to you, and I've talked to other people similar to you, people with the openness of, they're willing to hear different points of view. They're listening to everything because everything needs to be listened to. We're living in such a time of lies and propaganda. Everything needs to be reexamined because we've allowed the worst possible people on earth give us this projection of what is true, what is not true. And quite honestly, it's the worst people we could have trusted. So now it's time. People like yourself are invaluable. I mean, there's no way on earth people are going to hear about what happened in World War II, what really happened, not what the victors tell us what happened, unless we have people just like yourself who are willing to open up their minds and listen. And have people like Kyle and I on. I'm willing to go on any program that has any point of view on there. That's how confident I am in the truth. I hate to hear lies. I hate to hear lies spoken persuasively because there are so many people out there that it's easier to hear lies and accept them than it is to dig for the truth. And so we have so many people like that. But nevertheless, the people we're reaching right now, the people that are listening to us, give a damn. They're proactive. They're tearing themselves away from playing tennis or watching TV or drinking at some bar. They're listening to what they perceive as the truth. And I don't plan on letting those people down. And by golly, I know you're not, Henrik. We're dedicated to the premise that truth will win out in the end.
Yeah, that's correct. Now, Kyle, I asked you before here, but we didn't get to it yet. Let's talk a little bit more about Eisenhower's death camps and what happened after the war, the German soldiers that were rounded up. And, of course, you have some great footage in there. There's another piece of the footage I want to talk about later, but just these massive open-air prisons. What were the conditions like there?
They had nothing. They got food very rarely, well below the levels that would comply with the Geneva Convention. Well below. There's an estimate that's given by one of the survivors in there. Something like a tenth of the rations that the Americans were getting, something like that. But the fact of the matter is that they had a huge amount of supplies that were ready and available. The Red Cross was willing to step in and make sure that these people were taken care of. They weren't even allowed to have any kind of shelter. When they dug out a little hole in which they could sleep in the open, in the rain, in the sun, where they also had to defecate because there were no facilities, it was just such a horrendous environment that I don't think any of us could even possibly imagine. It actually puts the Holocaust narrative about the concentration camps to shame. The concentration camps, the actual reality of it for much of the war, it looks actually like a summer camp compared to these death camps, which were just out there in the open where they just had to stand there and many of them die right amongst their comrades when they were treated as disarmed enemy forces instead of as prisoners of war. Now, just real briefly to compare, at Auschwitz they had a swimming pool, they had a theater, they had a soccer pitch where they could go out and play. They played soccer against the SS guards. They had their own currency. They were able to mail things to loved ones. That's what was going on at Auschwitz, the terrible death camp. We never hear about what happened in these many, many massive compounds, these just open-air prisons for the millions of German soldiers that had surrendered at the end of the war or had been captured. And it's heartbreaking to see these once mighty soldiers just being put out in these encampments. It is, it goes to show what they view the German people and all of us as. Goyim. What does Goyim mean? It means a non-Jew, but it also means cattle. They're putting their cattle out in pens. That's what was really going on there. Eisenhower's plan came down from Jewish minds. This was a Jewish punishment, a Jewish vengeance that was being waged against the German people. It was such a vast crime that almost no one knows about.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, there's a lot of shocking footage and difficult footage to watch in the movie, but one that I want to spend some time talking about is, we can make another reference first. Do you guys remember the WikiLeaks footage of what they called, collateral murder, I think they called it, or collateral damage? It was from 2007, that Baghdad airstrike that went all around the world. Well, you have basically the first example of that in the film, Kyle, where you see this, it's got to be some kind of single engine fighter going around on the countryside and shooting at, you know, civilians and tractors or horse and carriage and all these kinds of things. It's just unbelievable to see. I mean, and then on top of it, that they filmed it, you know, it's amazing.
There's hours of this footage, hours upon hours, that's actually publicly available. You could just watch these fighter planes going all around, strafing all of Germany. It's absolutely sickening.
It is. It's an evil. Anybody who would there's no purpose for this other than some sort of a sadosexual gratification. I, on one hand, I'm glad they saved it because it shows the depravity of the Allies during the war.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I couldn't look at them.
I mean, when is this going to be deemed to be, you know, on the level of ethnic cleansing? I mean, they're targeting schoolgirls, you know, going to school, farmers. It's just, it's unbelievable.
There was nobody to say no. Never was a nation more disarmed, more helpless, and more at the mercy of the victors than Germany in 1945. Of course, never was mercy in shorter supply than in 1945. In fact, in some ways, the war just began in 1945 because what had happened prior to that was some actual fighting where the Germans actually could defend themselves. What happened afterwards was, of course, of people without any way of defending themselves. And I forget, Kyle, the statistics, but I think it's something like twice as many people died after the war in Germany as during the war. And we also know that Eisenhower, that wonderful individual who killed anywhere from 800,000 to 1.5 million helpless, disarmed German POWs after the war through starvation and dehydration and illness and sickness, that he killed more Germans after the war in peace, so-called peace, than died in all the fighting on the Western Front in the previous years of World War II. In other words, Germans did a pretty good job once they had the guns in their hands and fighting. But once the guns were laid down, they were at the mercy of a truly ugly, vicious, evil, depraved world at that time.
Yeah.
And I think that world still exists, too, by the way. The things that are going on in the Middle East, I don't see anybody marching in the streets against the depravity that's going on over there right now. Certainly, the waves were killing Muslims, Arabs, every nation we touch at the behest of Israel. It's about as depraved as the terror bombing, shooting them with the proxy missiles, with the drones, blowing them to bits with these enormous bombs I've got over there right now.
Well, that's what Kyle talked about earlier of you know, distancing yourself from the actual fighting, you know, with the drones and these kinds of things. You just push a button. You don't even have to see anything. You know, that's like the convenience of mass murder, you know.
It's just like playing a video game.
Exactly, yeah.
And Kyle mentioned, though, that once the planes came down for a city, let's say like Dresden, that has no defense, no guns, no airplanes, then you can come down very low. And when you do, when you get down to 9,000-10,000 feet, you can actually see people running around in the streets. One pilot, one bombardier actually saw a dog running across the street in a burning city and felt sorry for it. So then it starts becoming more personal. Then you have difficulty in coping. And I think then you have people like the American soldiers who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and who the hell knows what other countries over there. And they're dysfunctional. They suddenly have lost something horrible, something important in their makeup. And we've got some real – I've met some of these guys. Obviously, they've believed the propaganda about the Muslims. They've done some terribly depraved things. And now they have to come back to us and try to get through this. It still continues. This is World War II revisited. Right now, what we're going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they go and fight Muslims in their own countries, and then come back to their own countries to find that they've pretty much been invaded by Muslims through incentive programs by their own leaders. That London is now pretty much an Islamic city, and you see huge levels of immigration by Muslims after the United States started going to war after 9/11.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's amazing. You know, I've said before that pretty much the policy is that we have to hate Muslims when they're in their own countries. Bomb, 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 bomb Iran. We've got to go and overthrow dictators, and we've just got to do everything possible to wage war in Muslim countries because they're the bad guy. Except when they come into our lands, then we've got to give them a big hug and give them all sorts of money and give them all sorts of welfare and care for them from cradle to grave now. Never try to repatriate them. Just take them into our own countries. It's such a sick and twisted policy that is being enacted here.
Well, I'd say, Cal, it's a kind of a light version of mind control. It's schizophrenic, for the lack of a better term. This, if anything, causes disassociation, right? You're expect to have an attitude in one situation and then another in a different situation, which is, of course, how disassociation kind of works. I think they're very clever. They know what they're doing. And so the main crux of this becomes then, of course, about going to the root cause of all of these things, not only by looking at history, but in this particular case with the wars in the Middle East, and if we're seeing a demographic change in a lot of Western countries, then surely what's driving that is the war industry, right?
That's my guess. We have got a people now, and by people I mean a white Americans and white Europeans. We have got a people now that are sick in spirit and even physically sick. We've got people, we're like a wild animal now. We have no answers for our problems. We don't know what's causing our sickness. Most of us don't anyway. And we are turning upon ourselves right now. We're becoming a drug countries that are basically, they're turning to everything but hope. They, in other words, we're suffering from, we have no future. We have no hope. So we turn to drugs, or we turn to tattoos, or we turn to mindless jumping off buildings with a bungee cord, things like that. We're turning to things that are temporary tablets, pills, placebos. And no one has an answer. We have no leaders. We don't. We have no leaders because, for instance, this current crop of clapping, barking seals we have in America right now that they're trying to foist upon us to become American president. There's Mitt, there's Hill, there's this nutcase. I think she's an Indian from Massachusetts. Can't even think of her name. These are all Israeli first neocons. These are Israeli first, America second neocons. We could expect nothing but more war, more slavery. And yet, I don't know. People are voting less and less. You know, I don't know what to say. The last man who ran for election in the white world that I know of that was really someone for the people was Ron Paul, and of course he didn't even get to first base. They shut him down so quickly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what it's going to take. I hope to God it's not some sort of a worldwide catastrophe that finally breaks the chains, because you know, it's not going to be a fun thing either. You know what I'm talking about, worldwide catastrophe. Of course, we don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, as I see it, Putin, he's the only hope we've got right now. And though he may not be the person, at least he seems to be the only stabilizing influence in the world. Someone who's basically, you know, what would the world be like without Putin and his nuclear tipped missiles? What would it be like? I think it would be vastly worse, quite honestly.
Mm. I tend to disagree with Tom on that
one. Do you?
But I just find what he's been doing and some of the things he said to be, you know, of course some of the things he does do seem to be positive, nationalistic for Russia, but it just seems like such a mind screw that they've played on us, where we now in the Western world are so fed up with our leaders that we look to basically a KGB head of state as being the only real representative of honest political power in the world. It's just, I think it's all a ploy to kind of just tear us all apart in another kind of East versus West type of mindset that will just put us at each other's throats, like we're seeing going on in Ukraine, which is just trying to spark us into another brother's war, which I just want to avoid at all costs.
Yeah.
But I have to say this, Kyle. Disagree if you want on this, but years ago when the U.S. was on the verge of turning Syria back to the Stone Age with bombs and missiles, and of course Iran was next on the agenda, as we all know, who cast this long shadow across that entire situation, basically said, I would think about this before I attacked Syria, and it was Putin. Now, maybe I'm wrong on that.
They're still attacking Syria. They continue to bomb them, Israel, the United States, and to support ISIS as well, and other rebel groups that are fighting to overthrow a legitimate government. So, you know, I see Putin as a false hero or savior that really hasn't actually done too much. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong and he is exerting some real political influence. I just think that the American people are so fed up that they would not accept another boots on the ground type of operation. So they're just waging an air war now and a proxy war.
Right. Well, I mean, that whole situation in Syria is the primary driving of immigration into Sweden, for example. You know, this is causing a lot of ruckus. And I mean, you're right, Cal. I mean, despite it might have been much worse, let's say that, sure, without Putin's, you know, potential political incursion into this and trying to halt it. But more or less, they're doing what they're doing anyway. Now they're handing off weapons to the rebels within the country to do the dirty work for them, you know? So they find ways around it. That's my point.
You know, also, guys, we do have a tendency to see the other side as all-knowing, all-seeing, omniscient, somebody who never makes mistakes. They're very strong, very active. If you really look at it pragmatically, though, they're making tons of mistakes. In fact, one of the fallouts, one of the beneficial side effects of this swamping of Europe and America with third world colored immigration is that it's forcing whites to rethink everything they've ever been taught. And basically, they're starting to coalesce. They're starting to come back with each other. There are hundreds of websites devoted to white interests out there right now. There are thousands of people are coming back, and they're starting to have a racial awareness, because if they don't, they know what damn good and well what's going to happen. They can see it. I mean, in America, these riots, now, I'm not entirely sure what that is all about. They continue. Of course, it's kind of like a traveling road show. Today it's Boston, tomorrow it's Baltimore, Chicago, and you've got a cop killing a black who attacks him. And that's got a powerful influence. I've got to tell you, it may empower blacks and immigrants from all over the world, in Europe, whatever. But it's also doing something. There's a reaction going on right now. I see it. I sense it. And it's something that most people probably wouldn't come right out and admit. But I think probably within the next year, if somebody does some demographic studies, there's going to be an enormous white flight from even the suburbs now, heading to the boondocks. Because it does seem like the government and the media, which of course are the worst enemies of the white world, are now rather openly attacking the white world. That's the way it seems.
Yeah, yeah.
Kyle, any on that? What do you think?
Oh, yeah,
there's way more thinking about this than I do. Right?
There's no one, absolutely no one in the public spotlight, except for very few controlled opposition figures, maybe like Ann Coulter once in a while, actually standing up for white people's interests. You'd think with a majority in a country that there'd be some political leader who'd say, hey, you know, I want to tap into that majority. But no,
exactly.
It's not allowed.
Yeah.
You know, what is required of both political parties and even third parties oftentimes is to swear pretty much undying complete allegiance to Israel. Tom mentioned before the whole policy of Israel first. This is a very real policy. And if many of these politicians want to get any campaign funding whatsoever at a serious level where they can compete, they have to pretty much swear that allegiance to Israel and say that they will promise they will never cut any kind of budget to Israel. All the while people in America are going homeless, where there are homes available, but they're owned by banks. Well, while homes are being given away to immigrants, to illegal immigrants in this country, our own population is going homeless. All of our money is being sent off to international banks. That was what the bailout was Jewish international banks pretty much getting to rob the American taxpayer blind and put us all into debt as slaves to this system. And I'd say a lot of people are getting fed up with it and do see the hypocrisy of our political leaders who call us racist for even saying anything that goes against the politically correct standard. All the while, in Israel, they actually have policies that, by their own definition, by the definition of our political leaders, are incredibly racist, probably the most racist in the entire world. And yet they deserve our undying support.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you're homeless, you can just utilize your white privilege. That'll get you off the streets, right? Oh. Or like a veteran or something like that, you know, that's been fighting these wars. And I mean, it's so ridiculous, you know. But, Kyle, let me ask you. Obviously, you released a film for free. People can go see it on YouTube. And I know how much time it takes to work with film and animation and scripts and piecing everything together. And it's incredibly time consuming. And, you know, I wish there were teams of people who could dedicate their time and get everything together. I know you've worked with some great people too, of course, but you have DVD versions available, I believe, on the of the film that people can buy and support you that way. Is there any other way? Can people donate to you if they want to help you out in the efforts?
Sure, there's a donate button that's right there on hellstormdocumentary.com. And I say to people who can't afford it, honestly, just download it onto your computer, share it around any way that you can. Just get this information out there. You know, and if we are successful in getting this information out there to a large number of people, you know, maybe we can be even further compensated for our efforts during the struggle later at that time. But right now, I'm just really concerned with us succeeding. You know, I that's why I've released it to everybody for free. It needs to get out there. This truth needs to see the light of day. And it's the reaction I've gotten thus far is amazing. The reaction on YouTube is amazing. You know, the positive comments and just the thumbs up as compared to the thumbs down is just overwhelming. It's amazing to see so many people supportive of this side of the story, this truth we're trying to get out there.
Well, you know, I think when people see the film and realize what it's about, I mean, how can anybody watch that and deny that this is not a story that should be told? You know, I mean, it needs to get out there, and it's going to through the efforts of those of both you, Kyle, and of course also you, Tom, who has written the book that lies at the background of that. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's what we can leave people on for this time, guys, of just encouraging them to go and watch the film, spread it around, give it to, you know, friends and family and talk about it and be, as you said, Tom, as well. I agree with that. It's at some point you got to kind of lift your head from the ground a bit and start talking about these things at the very least and start, you know, not letting people get away with some of these things and show that there is a resistance there, because to a certain extent we've allowed ourselves to be pushed into the corner in this way. And frankly, we're way too nice, and we give you know, too much room, and eventually we're gonna, as we do now, we suffer from that, and then we lack the capability of even standing up for ourselves, which is extraordinary. And we know that there's tons of work, psychological work, propaganda, persuasion, all kinds of things that lies at the root of that. But ultimately, It is up to us, because if we don't stand up for ourselves, then as the look of it, no one else will, right?
Yes, absolutely spot on. You know, it's amazing, too, I must say this. I hate to keep going on about this, but when people donate to Henrik Red Eyes or Kyle Hunt, Renegade Broadcasting, and the film, these guys are so dedicated that You're not giving money to them so they can retire to some nice island and live out their life in anonymity and exclusion. What you're doing is basically preparing for the next situation. In other words, you give to Kyle Hunt, I guarantee you, I know where that money's going. It's not going for the silly things in life. Trust me, Kyle will be working on another movie. And if you give to Henrik, Henrik will still be around, so Kyle Hunt can come back on Henrik's program and talk about that, where your money went the last time. And so it's money that gets recycled, and it's all for us, folks. It's all for truth, and it's for the world. To basically snap the world out of this nightmare that it's been locked into for this past 70 years, and free it up so that we can actually have a world we're happy in, for God's sakes, that we're not afraid of, that we're not being spied upon, or that we're not running the risk of being droned to death if we happen to be in some particular country. And that's what we're fighting for. It's not, I do go on. I apologize for that, but I firmly believe in that. If I had $1 million, very quickly I wouldn't have $1 million because there's so many places I would put that money.
Oh, there's no lack of things to do and things to talk about and get out and imagine what we could do with some good hearty competition when it comes to online TV and radio networks and things like this and get talented people involved and everything costs money of course, but it's well said, Tom, and it's true. People can help in so many different ways and they can help a lot of different people as well. And I support what you guys are doing. And I want the information you guys are talking about to get out there because it's so much else hinges on that. And it's so important just to, for the sake of truth and for the sake of all the victims that died during the Second World War. And that's why I think that's where the discussion needs to be. But before we wrap things up for this time, guys, let me just ask you if you have something maybe upcoming that you'd like to let us know about. Kyle, do you have something in the pipeline you would let our listeners know about?
There's nothing official yet. There are a few different ideas that are getting bounced around. I might, in addition to, of course, doing my show every Sunday night, I might do maybe a short video or two in the meantime, but I'm definitely gearing up to do another big production, something to follow up on with Hellstorm. Now, I know Tom has a book out there about what happened to the South at the end of the Civil War, and afterwards. It was a lot like what happened to Germany during and after World War II. So there would be some interesting parallels that could be drawn there. But really, just to give that account from that side of the story, because we pretty much get mainly just the Union perspective in that, and that good war to defeat those evil Southern racists. So it's something that perhaps I'll look into a bit, but if nothing else, people should at least go out and look at some of these other titles that Tom has out available. He's written some very interesting books. And one of them is about the death of Dixie. What's the title of that one? The Day Dixie Died?
The Day Dixie Died, yeah. Right now it's in limbo. It's in another world because it's only in a Kindle form. Apparently the book the book came out right around 9/11. And everybody was watching TV at the time. Nobody was buying books. And so it really was stillborn, a book. It's been called a very powerful book, though, because it's not the Moonlight and Magnolia scenario that we've been told. It's not just Robert E. Lee and U.S. Grant sealing the deal with a handshake, and then we become one nation again. Nope. As a matter of fact, Dixie is still an entity unto itself. It's still a nation. Many people agree with me on that. And it really, it's a precursor to what happened in Germany. It's war by other means. And it was all about starvation and rape and degradation and humiliation. And then, I've already said enough, but it would not be a down step or a step backwards. As far as Kyle Hunt Productions is concerned, it would be more of the same, only a different venue. But what Kyle does is Kyle's business. I will help him if he wants my help on anything. I'm thinking that this, with the success of Hellstorm, the documentary film, that Kyle's audience would not accept anything but perhaps a follow-up on this. Some of the things that, let's face it, you could do another movie, two or three movies, and never touch the same stuff over and over again. We didn't even talk about, the repatriation. Well, we did talk a little bit about it, but there's some terrible things. But let me say this. Anybody who wants to buy one of my books, just go to Amazon, like I said, or get a hold of me, mtgoodrich@aol.com. And buy my books. And I'm going to tell you straight, buy my books, and here's a good reason why. Because I'm trying to publish two more books. The books are called Rage and Revenge, Torture and Atrocities in War and Peace. And there's a volume of part one and part two. And I'll be quite honest. Buy my books because that will give me money to help publish these things. There's no publisher out there going to take these books. I have to do it myself through CreateSpace. And actually, I prefer that because I'm in total control. I do as well as I can. And then I see the consequences, the benefits from it, rather. And so by buying my books, you're going to basically be putting out a couple more books, I guarantee you, because these books are ready to go. I just simply need to get a little jingle in my pockets to push these things through. And that does cost some money. But if you had a choice, I would say buy Kyle's film or donate to Kyle's film, because I consider that as important and even more important than what I'm doing right now. But your money, if you donate or if you buy books, believe me, it's going to very good causes. It's not going to buy a case of beer. Tom Gooders can enjoy drinking booze and watching sports tomorrow. It's going to go. You know, the one thing I love about Henrik is these shows like we're doing right now, and they're fun. And yet we all start getting a little punch drunk after 2 hours. It's it's like, how many more vowels and syllables can we come up with in this thing? And every once in a while, just like right now, Henrik will laugh, and I love his laugh. He's got a great laugh. It's a Swedish laugh. Despite his eloquence in English, Henrik right. is a Swedish speaker originally.
That is correct. That is correct.
But no, you speak better than probably 98%, 99% of Americans and Brits. So you're quite the intellectual, Henrik, I got to say.
Well, thank you for that, Tom. I appreciate that, and we do the best we can here. And but yeah, definitely. I mean, it's an important point you mentioned, Tom, and we can round things up on that note here. But support Tom's work. That is at the root of things like what Kyle has done with his film and my ability to, of course, bring on these great researchers that are talking about the work they do. And that's why that process is, without that, everything else fails. So that is the most important thing. And as you said, Tom, there's just so many interesting cover-ups and things that we don't know about from a historical perspective that deserves attention. And you've written about many of those. We'll make sure to have all the links up there. And you need to set up a website one of these days, Tom, as well, by the way, so we can get some of your updates. Objective right there for you.
Okay, Kyle has threatened to do that, so I might let him do it.
There you go. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
people can buy his book just by clicking on the link at the Hellstrom documentary site as well. So
right.
If you don't feel like searching for it, just go there. You can get the DVD, buy the book, and just contribute in just terms of sharing things. As we said, people can contribute in any way that they can come up with. And, if they have a program – like Henrik does, I'm willing to talk. Helping to get this word out is just so important. So thank you so much, Henrik, for having us on here to help promote the film and posting a link on the website. It really means a lot.
Oh, you bet. Thank you so much, Kyle and Tom. Keep up the good work, both of you, and we'll have you back again and keep talking, all right?
Okay, Kyle, I'll great see you care. Later. And Henrik, thanks so much.
Bomber über Dresden, sie kamen in der Nacht. Bomber über Dresden, den Tod in Bombenschacht. Bomber über Dresden, sie brachten euch den Tod. Bomber über Dresden, sie brachten euch Elend und Not. Thank you. brennende Häuser. Und schreiende Kinder. Doch Bomber über Dresden. Und sie kamen immer wieder. Bomber über Dresden. Sie brachten euch den Tod. Bomber über Dresden. Sie brachten euch Elend und Not.
Well, what do you think? Do we live in a better world today because of the rape of Germany? Was it fair what was visited upon them? Did you look at the film? Well, if not, please do and tell us that this was the good war. You know, if the script that has been written to propagate German villainy as a perpetual scapegoat, the one that everyone always can blame, if that turns out not to be accurate, but in fact predicated on many different factors of those powers around and in Germany at the time, then there is nothing that can be done to take back that which has been lost. It can't be done anyway. As the world tumbles towards the precipice of the nonsense and disillusionment, we are indeed losing our footing. You can't build a world on lies. It's just not going to last in the long run. It will turn on itself, and it will fall apart. Perhaps it's ironic that the victory that was won is something that is taking us closer towards our own death every day. Well, people are calling this progress. They are, in fact, happy with it. They want more of it. So ask yourself this. Who won? And where are we today? 1 + 1 = 3, right? 2 + 2 = 5, is it? Oh, well, we can continue to convince ourselves that where we are going is a good place. But as a closing thought, please then enjoy your
freedom.
We have much more coming up, ladies and gentlemen. You can find the full guest list in our radio archive on our website, redicecreations.com. or redicemembers.com. Please take good care of yourself. Keep thinking, keep questioning everything you're being told. Stay strong, and we will talk more soon. Take care.